Do you know your net worth? Or can you even list all your financial accounts? Believe it or not, most people can't. The problem is simple. When you don't track your finances, you leave hard-earned money on the table by overspending and undersaving. Monarch is the solution, an all-in-one personal finance tool that brings your entire financial life together in one clean interface on your laptop or phone. In just minutes, you can link all your accounts to see a clear, complete picture of your financial health. With data visualizations and AI-driven insights, Monarch helps you spot patterns, cut wasteful spending, and make better financial decisions without ever touching a spreadsheet. Monarch more than pays for itself. In fact, users save over $200 a month on average. That's why the Wall Street Journal named Monarch the best budgeting app of 2025. Get 50% off your first year. That's just $50 total when you use code BALANCE at monarch.com. That's monarch.com, promo code BALANCE. Monarch, the modern way to manage money.
A factual data creation facility production. Medically
understood. Recorded live. Because let's face it, the alternative wouldn't be very practical. It's the OFNT podcast. Now, here's your host, a man who's a year older but none the wiser, Jim Schaefer.
Welcome to the OFNT podcast, episode 291, which I'm calling Tech Fiddling. Today I celebrate yet another trip around the sun. Now I hope to have many more. To ensure these future trips, I try and exercise as much as I can. The hardest thing is getting my diet in order. That ice cream and soda I splurged on today certainly doesn't help things, though. I'm still getting acquainted with the new Rodecaster duo, so excuse any missteps during this recording. Let me know how you like the new sound. Well, what say we get this birthday episode started now?
Oh, yes.
News. Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Tech news. The giant fruit company, aka Apple, just finished a busy week announcing a cornucopia of updates for various products.
Wait a moment. Was there some sort of Apple event that I somehow missed?
No. All the announcements were made by press release.
Now, why would the giant fruit company do it this way?
First of all, it's cheaper. Secondly, the updates to the products were minimal. Basically, the MacBook Pro, iPad Pro, and let's not forget the redheaded stepchild of Apple's current hardware lineup, the Vision Pro, had their CPUs updated to the Apple Silicon M5 chip, which brought along all the benefits of the new chip, which were 20% faster processing and better graphics performance. Cosmetically, all these devices remained the same. The exception being the Vision Pro, which got a new mesh headband or something in the Apple C1X modem, the latter being internal, not cosmetic. Another thing announced by Apple last week was the availability of the iPad Air Magic Keyboard attachment in the color black. Previously, it was only available in white. I'm not tempted by any of these updates, though I must confess the mini LED display of the MacBook Pro made me give it a look. But I decided to just hang on to my M2 chip 15-inch MacBook Air until an OLED screen version of it hits the market in a couple of years. Even then, I'd probably be more interested in a new Mac Mini and display. I find that I do most of my everyday computing on my M4 MacBook Pro, which I purchased, well, not too long ago. What we didn't get was an updated Apple TV 4K. If Apple announced a new model of the streaming box with some sort of FaceTime camera, be it built in or have a way of attaching a webcam, well, I'd be all in. Are you planning on upgrading to any of these new devices Apple just announced? While I do enjoy clowning on the super expensive Apple Vision Pro, the competitor to what has to be Apple's lowest selling device lately is about to make its entrance.
Don't leave us hanging. What is this competitor and who's behind it?
Well, that would be Samsung with its Android XR headset.
Oh, that's right. I'd forgotten about that.
Uh-oh.
As have most of us, I think. 9to5Google.com reports that Samsung will hold an event on October 21st, where the company is expected to announce their own take on augmented reality goggles. According to 9to5 Google, this new AR headset is expected to cost around $1,800, which is some $1,200 cheaper than Apple's Vision Pro.
Wow!
If Samsung can deliver features and performance that approaches that of the Vision Pro, then they might have a hit, albeit a minor one on their hands. It'll be down to how good the software for the device is and third-party developer support, which of course is critical. AR and VR headsets are still a niche market. My question about this device are, will this headset integrate with a desktop operating system like the Vision Pro does with macOS? If so, which one? Chrome OS or Windows? Perhaps both. But while this headset was developed jointly with Google and Qualcomm, I haven't seen nor heard of Microsoft taking an interest in this project. Lately, Google has been busy making Chrome OS an extension of the Android mobile operating system. Maybe this project and those that are still in the pipeline are the reason for this. I have no interest in augmented or virtual reality goggles, no matter who manufactures them. Now, augmented reality glasses, or spectacles, if you will, are a different story. I feel that, like Apple's Vision Pro, these Samsung AR headsets are but a stepping stone to true augmented reality glasses. Well, that's my opinion, and I'm sticking with it. In another Samsung versus Apple battle of rival products, this one is between their respective thin phone entries. According to numerous sources, Samsung has canceled plans for a follow-up to this year's S25 Edge. And this was supposedly due to anemic sales
and battery life.
Even though Apple's iPhone Air almost immediately sold out when first offered in China last Friday, a report from a Japanese investment and securities firm claims that Apple has already reduced production of the iPhone Air due to, well, you guessed it, underwhelming sales.
And battery life.
I kind of saw this coming back in September on iPhone launch day. As soon as pre-orders opened up for the iPhone 17 series, both the regular iPhone and Pro iPhone shipment dates slipped to beyond the release day. The iPhone Air was still available for immediate shipment or in-store pickup on release day. While these thin-as-in phones seem futuristic, there's still too many compromises with them, especially concerning the battery. Samsung will replace the S25 Edge in its upcoming lineup with the S26 Plus. And by all indicators, Apple will eventually replace the iPhone Air. I think we'll be seeing the Air return for at least one more year, just like the iPhone Mini, which stuck around for another year despite low sales. There are also rumors of the highly anticipated iPhone Fold being pushed back until 2027, so the Air could fill that gap until the Fold is finally ready for prime time. According to AndroidPolice.com, Google has been having problems lately, both software and hardware related, with their newly released Pixel 10 phones. The latest problem is the random crashing of applications. To quote the article, reports of these crashes have been pouring in since last weekend. Users are complaining of sudden, repeated app crashes, causing an error message that states, "App isn't responding."
Well, duh.
Reinstalling the app and clearing its cache does nothing to fix the problem. What's perplexing to users is this apparent bug has appeared out of nowhere and isn't affecting older Pixel phones. The online Android community believes that this bug is the result of a recent Play Store update and recommends a workaround that requires the user to uninstall the latest October Play Store update and then reinstall it. This seems to resolve the problem. Well, at least for now. As for Google, they have yet to acknowledge this problem, so who knows when they'll get around to rolling out an update in order to fix it. I suspect this has something to do with the new Tensor chip, which powers the Pixel 10. Not only was it manufactured using the fairly new 3-nanometer process, but the new manufacturer of the Tensor is TSMC, which also makes Apple Silicon chips. Previously, Tensor chips were sourced exclusively from Samsung chip foundries. Well, something has changed with the new Tensor G5, and Google now has to figure out what that change is and fix the software side of it.
But then again, what do you really know? You're just an old geezer sitting in front of a microphone.
Well, that, of course, is true. And sometimes the truth hurts.
Oh, I apologize for being a little critical there. By the way, happy birthday.
No problem. I've developed a thick skin over my many years. And thank you for the birthday wishes. Coming from you, that means absolutely nothing to me.
Who's being critical now?
Well, that would be me. Anyhow, it's problems like this that pop up on Android that keeps me from considering using the operating system and even Pixel phones as my daily driver. In some more tech news that will make you go,
huh?
Over the last couple of years or so, many companies like Apple and Google, for example, have launched satellite-based messaging services. Amongst them is my cellular carrier of choice, T-Mobile. Well, Wired magazine reports that findings from UC San Diego and the University of Maryland have found that the data sent and received by T-Mobile's satellite messaging service is unencrypted.
What the hell?
And they were able to retrieve and read these messages using an off-the-shelf satellite receiver that cost less than $800. What makes this situation even worse is that apparently the U.S. military is a customer of the service, and their data was exposed too.
Well, isn't that just dandy?
Is it fair to say that no method of digital communications is secure for personal privacy and security?
Yes.
Just think of it this way. Always assume that when you walk out of your home, you're on camera. And if you want to keep something private, well, don't use digital means to share that information. No matter what messenger or digital method you're using. At this point, it would be better to go back to analog phone lines and shortwave number stations. Facebook Messenger, well, I guess now it's called Meta Messenger or just Messenger, is a big part of my lovely wife's online life. The Messenger app is her main way of communicating with friends and relatives who are scattered around the globe. Heck, she even uses Messenger to keep in touch with local friends. For me, not so much. I have Messenger loaded up on my iPad and Mac Mini, and the sole reason that I have it on those two devices is to communicate with my wife when she's traveling. My iPad is always located downstairs while my Mac Mini is permanently upstairs. That way, if she happens to call, I have a convenient way to answer. Well, that's all about to change now, as AppleInsider.com is reporting that Meta is discontinuing Messenger's desktop apps, both Mac and Windows operating systems. The desktop apps have already been pulled from their respective app stores. Meta hasn't given a hard date for when the desktop apps will stop working, just saying that users will receive a message telling them that they have 60 days to use the app until the plug is pulled. If you want to continue using Messenger on desktop devices, you'll have to log into Facebook.com on your web browsers. That's slightly inconvenient, but still doable. I'm thinking that Meta no longer wants to maintain or update the app when Windows or Mac OS updates. Tech I'm using. The tech I used, or rather struggled with the most over the last week, was my new audio interface, the Rodecaster Duo. Next week, I'll be attempting to explore the device's other features. I just couldn't muster the courage to screw around with the current settings I arrived at after going through so much effort to get the thing to work properly. I talk about this extensively in the podcast section. I also got to try out Apple's text message language translation feature. For some reason, my mobile carrier, T-Mobile, believes that my native tongue is Spanish, except when it comes to notifying me that the bill is due. That's always in English. In order to transfer my lovely wife's and my phone number over to our new phones, I had to disable the SIM theft protection feature on our account. Well, I re-enabled it on Monday, hence the text message from T-Mobile, in Spanish. Looking at the message, I saw just underneath it the word translate with a question mark. I thought to myself, well, why not? By pressing on the message bubble, a menu pops up asking what language you'd like to translate. The choices were English to Spanish or Spanish to English. I'm assuming if the phone detects other languages, well, that would be part of the choices also.
Or not.
Yeah, that's also a possibility. Of course, I chose Spanish to English, and the phone then had to download both languages.
Ha.
You'd figure that being that you selected English as your preferred language while setting the phone up, it would already have English aboard.
One would assume so, but according to the phone, that wasn't the case. It took longer than expected to download the almost 2 gigs of data. I thought that amount of data was excessive, but perhaps all of the available languages, not just English and Spanish, were also downloaded. After the download completed, I repressed the message bubble, selected translate, and waited for the translation to appear. And waited. And waited. I gave up after a bit and decided to come back to it later, figuring the data wasn't finished absorbing into the operating system yet during my first attempt. A little while later, I tried again, and this time the translation was instantaneous. It's too bad Apple doesn't have any of my wife's native languages available. If they did, I'd be able to spy on her conversations with friends and relatives.
You wouldn't actually do that, would you?
Of course not. I'm still liking my new iPhone 17 Pro Max and have realized that the blue color of the phone resembles that of my old Nokia E63. That phone was my first big boy phone. I love that phone, which explains the connection I thought I was developing with the 17 Max. You know, the connection that I went on and on about a couple of episodes ago.
Yes?
Well, I think I was actually experiencing nostalgia. Now, that's not a bad thing, but it isn't the same as forming an attachment. Entertainment news. I've been pretty busy lately, so I haven't really watched much on television. I'm sure that will all change when the weather turns colder, but here in Tennessee, it really doesn't get as cold as the winter did up in New York. I do have a lot of shows to catch up on, though. Only Murders in the Building, Slow Horses, and Foundation, to name a few. Speaking of which, Slow Horses and Foundation are on Apple TV+. But according to a recent article from MacRumors.com, Apple TV Plus will be renamed to just Apple TV in the near future. Well, it makes sense, though there might be some confusion with Apple's streaming box. The article quotes Apple's Eddie Q as saying, quote, "Our hardware is called Apple TV 4K for TV. I think that's fine. And the app is called Apple TV. It's been called Apple TV on our third-party products as well. So I don't think there'll be a problem at all," unquote. Well, Mr. Q, that remains to be seen, doesn't it? King of all streamers, Netflix, is adding video podcasts to its lineup. This news appeared on 9to5Mac.com and many other news outlets. The source of these podcasts is none other than Spotify. Spotify will be pulling the video podcast it supplies to Netflix off from YouTube, making them exclusive to both Netflix and Spotify. This is seen as a move to fend off the giant that is Google and YouTube.
I recall Spotify trying this exclusiveness in the past. How did that work for them?
As I recall, it didn't work out too good for them. I wonder if the video podcasts that appear on Netflix will be compensated. And if so, how will it be calculated? According to a press release from Netflix, the deal is wide-ranging, with the Ringer Sports Podcast Network, true crime and pop culture shows being the main subjects. The deal is set to start in early 2026. A list of shows confirms that all of the podcasts that are slated to show up on Netflix are owned by Spotify, but still, these shows currently rake in a heap of cash for their hosts via YouTube. With them now exclusive to Spotify and Netflix, I'm sure that monetary bonanza will be sorely missed. I'd wager that more people consume these shows on YouTube than they do on the other two platforms. In order to continue watching them, consumers will be having to pony up for a subscription to Netflix, which isn't cheap, or at the very least, create a Spotify account. I feel that many will just move on to other shows that cover the same topics and forget about Netflix and Spotify exclusives. What do you think? Update: the Ringer Sports Network's video podcast will also be carried on the Samsung TV Plus streaming service. Podcast news. I had intended to use my newly purchased Rode Rodecaster Duo audio interface to record last week's episode, but things didn't work out for me. After setting the Duo up, I wasn't able to listen back to what I had recorded. I had to engage the Duo chat feature in order to play back audio, while the sparse instructions that came with the unit said otherwise. Even after eventually figuring out the proper setting by trial and error, the audio recorded sounded completely different than what it had sounded like in my headphones while recording. The audio had a low and muddy sound and was unusable. I quickly switched back to the Presonus interface to record last week's episode. Monday, I spent the day scouring the internet for information about the duo, along with fiddling around with it to see if I could figure something out. This included switching digital audio workstation software, trying different settings, and even purchasing an SD memory card for the Duo. I thought that by recording the audio directly onto the Duo, I could then export the audio file to my digital audio workstation for editing and processing. Despite all this, I got the same low and muffled results. Late in the evening, after just about giving up, I seemed to have solved the issue. No thanks to Rode or the internet. It was strictly figured out by the trial and error method. I believe that, unlike many of the audio interfaces on the market currently, the Rodecaster Duo was mainly designed to be used with the Windows operating system. I, of course, use Apple's Mac OS. Other manufacturers' interfaces are basically plug-and-play for Macs. Not so the Duo. Windows-based machines usually require specialized drivers to be installed in order for a lot of these other audio interfaces to work properly. Mac OS usually doesn't require this. Thinking that perhaps the Duo needed external drivers for Mac OS, I looked on the Rode's website but found none. You know, some enterprising author should put out a Rodecaster for Dummies book.
Have you actually checked? Maybe there is a Rodecasters for Dummies book out there.
Yes, I did check Amazon. Unfortunately, such a book doesn't exist, at least not yet. The Rodecaster series of interfaces are powerful pieces of tech, bringing just about every feature you can think of and even some you wouldn't have thought of. In my opinion, besides making the Rodecaster Duo and Pro, for that matter, expensive to buy, all the other options available to the users of these interfaces makes them too complicated to use.
Perhaps it's just that you're too old.
I'm sure that has something to do with it, but I try to keep the old gray matter occupied by figuring out tech problems and other things. My late father, who shared the same birthday with me, was always messing around with new tech of his time. Things like cameras, stereos, and video recorders. The day that I realized that he was getting on in years was when he asked me what was the purpose of an iPod. When I explained that you could listen to music and podcasts, he still didn't get it. He was confused about how you got that content onto the iPod. No matter how I explained the procedure to him, he just couldn't comprehend it. But being an avid fan of tech and how it works, I'm trying to stave off that day where I don't understand any tech. Though I know that day is inevitable.
Well, that's great and all, but would you mind getting back to the main subject?
Oh, all right. There are other brands of audio interfaces on the market that try to compete with the Rodecaster, Mackie, Zoom, and plethora of Chinese-based outfits, but they're either just as complicated or don't have the features of the Rodecaster. The best competitor to the Rodecaster is the Luit Connect 6, which is an interface that I've used until recently. It does just about everything the Rodecaster Duo can, but it's much simpler to use. The downside of the Luit is that the digital-to-analog audio converters, though powerful, are not as good as the ones in the Rode. And there's no Bluetooth capability. Connecting outside sources to the Luit is a pain, and it's impossible for some users to connect a cell phone to it. And that's due to a hardware bug. I found that out the hard way. Also, Luit seems to have stopped supporting the Connect 6. I haven't gotten a firmware update, nor an update for the software that controls the interface in over 2 years. Instead, Luit's cheaper and less capable Connect 2 seems to be getting the company's attention.
Well, they're probably selling more of that model.
Yeah, I'm sure they are. If Luit were to release a version 2 of the Connect 6, well, I'd give it a serious look. At one point, the Duo had me so frustrated that I was about to return it. Thank goodness I happened to stumble upon a configuration setting for the USB output, which defaulted to reducing the audio gain by 12 decibels. Once I adjusted that, everything started working better. As far as the sound of the Duo goes, well, I'm used to it, but I feel there's a slight, how can I describe it? It's like your voice sounds to yourself when suffering with nasal congestion. Just slightly, but enough to bother me. I'm using the Rode Duo now, How do you think it sounds compared to previous episodes? The thing I like the most about the Duo is its noise gate. It's the best one I've ever used. It really does shut out room noise to the max. I haven't dared to try and pair my phone to the Duo via Bluetooth yet, not until I can find more time to learn about the device and its intricacies. Last Monday, the podcast world lost one of its oldest independent podcasts. The WTF podcast, hosted by Mark Maron, dropped its last episode, which was number 1,686 last week.
Wow.
Now that's a lot of episodes.
Yes.
Mr. Maron has been cranking out episodes of the WTF podcast since September of 2009, and the show reached its peak with episode 613, which dropped on June 22nd of 2015. That's when President Barack Obama was the guest. That episode marked the first time a sitting president of the United States appeared on a podcast. Mr. Maron is a comedian who hosted a show on the now-defunct Air America radio network. Air America was supposed to be the answer to the conservative talk radio host who ruled the airwaves back then, as they still do now. He was fired and rehired a few times from the doomed left-leaning network over the years. His last firing came in 2009, and that's when he pivoted to podcasting. In fact, still in possession of his Air America ID card, the first couple of episodes of WTF were recorded at his former employer's New York studios, unbeknownst to them. From there, he relocated to California. I mean, where else? And turned the garage of his house into a recording studio. A pretty good one, in my opinion.
Is it much nicer than yours?
Oh yeah, with better equipment too. I wish I could set up in my garage. My studio, if you want to call it one, occupies the smallest room of my house and doubles as my fitness room. It's also the noisiest room in the house. Still, it's a lot less noisy than the recording space I used up in New York. Well, anyway, it was smooth sailing for the WTF podcast, which made its money from advertisements. That is, until Podcasting Incorporated became a thing. This gave shows like WTF stiff competition. And by 2022, WTF started losing listeners and sponsors. And then the bottom fell out of the podcast ad market, with the going monetary rate per ad reaching record lows. Well, this drove the final nail into the WTF coffin, with Mr. Maron deciding to end the long run of the show. He went on a farewell podcast tour, which didn't do much for his reputation. He came off to many as bitter and jealous, especially a fellow comedian and podcaster Joe Rogan, who he partially blamed for his show's downfall. While I seldom listen to the WTF podcast, and certainly didn't agree with Mr. Maron's politics, he was a great host and drew many top-notch guests over the years. It's also sad seeing another independent podcast end, and I'm sure there will be more to follow as mainstream media continues to crumble.
Now I wonder what Mr. Maron will be doing with his studio.
Well, that's a good question. As I've recommended previously, he could rent it out to other podcasters or even donate the time and space to them. I'm sure there's a tax write-off somewhere in doing that. Perhaps he'll eventually miss podcasting after taking a break, and he'll come back to it. He'll have to come up with a different format, though. The straight interview type of show he somewhat pioneered is now a dime a dozen, as the cool kids say.
No!
No!
The music is playing as another episode, as well as this year's muted birthday celebration, winds down. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I enjoyed making it for you. If you like what you heard, well, you can make a donation using the link in the show notes. Any and all donations will be greatly appreciated. You can always reach me at ofntpodcast@gmail.com if you're so inclined. I'd enjoy hearing from you. Remember, don't listen to what they say. Watch what they do. What are you waiting for? I'm not willing to share my birthday cake with you, so get off my lawn. Stay skeptical. I'm out.
See ya. And that, folks, is the end of the show.
Ever wondered if that UFO sighting was a secret government project?
Not because they didn't go to the moon, but because they seen something on the moon they weren't supposed to.
Or if ancient civilizations really had alien architects.
Like, so Roswell, obviously they think they recovered crafts and beings.
On Theorist Theorizing, wild speculation meets seasoned storytelling.
How they dug 2 kilometers below these pyramids and created all the structures that we're now finding.
Join the theorists as they dive into UFOs, cryptids, government cover-ups, true crime, and the weirdest theories the internet and humanity has to offer.
Giza and the pyramids itself being an energy source, you know?
It's not a lecture. It's a round table of curiosity, comedy, and what if.
Maybe they got tipped off by these U-boats that fled to Argentina, that there was something there.
Theorist Theorizing. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts.